You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to episode 409 of the Fabulous Peltoncast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carzino.
And we are coming to you in separate locations this week. I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of the four-time WNBA champion Storm.
And I'm coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
Well, Seattle, Washington is also, at long last, home to an athletic director for the University of Washington. Because, what is it, 5 days? After Troy Dannon's departure for the University of Nebraska, the Huskies went across the state to replace him with their rival athletic director at Washington State, Pat Chun. Certainly a logical hire, although not necessarily, I guess I would say, one that I was expecting, just given everything that's transpired between UW and Washington State over the past year.
This was the most acceptable defection from Wazoo to UW. I feel like a coach feels a little bit different, but athletic director, there's something about it just being so institutional that this one didn't surprise me. After we talked through the names yesterday, way back on yesterday's emergency pod, this shit just moves. Literally, we have so many things have happened in UW sports in the last 3 months. I was talking to Katie about this. We're renewing our Husky football tickets. And it's just like, we literally went to the national championship game. And that feels like it was 100 years ago. In calendar year 2024, UW made the national championship game, played in the national championship game, lost their head coach, hired a new head coach from somewhere else, lost their athletic director, fired their basketball coach, hired a new basketball coach, and hired a new athletic director. And it's only March 26th. That is incredible how much transact has happened. And also, almost all of the players left from the football team. Almost all of the players will leave from the basketball team. It is wild how much is happening at the University of Washington. And not just that, they're going to be in a whole new conference next year for both of these sports.
Very little of the figures of the University of Washington, like football team specifically, like conference, head coach, athletic director, all going to be different when they take the field in September. It is pretty wild. And then men's basketball, obviously the same with the head coach. So yeah, we did an emergency pod on Monday morning after the news that the Huskies hired Danny Sprinkle from Utah State as their men's basketball coach became official. Talked about AD candidates. We did not mention Pat Chun was not in the list that we talked about.
That is incredibly wrong. Wait, talked about Pat Chun for like 5 minutes.
Did we?
You don't remember yesterday?
I guess not. What a week.
Your guy who is surprised by this? This is just like beforehand you learned that Avicii died. You're surprised by a conversation that we had yesterday?
Like I'm getting
older?
Are
you joking? Do I need to go back and replay that podcast for you?
I didn't think he was on the list we talked about.
About Pat Chun. I went and looked up his credentials to see if he had any ties to UW. I was like, oh, he is the athletic director at Florida Atlantic. Then he was at Ohio State. And I concluded at the end of that podcast that I felt like Pat Chun was going to be the guy. And then he was hired the next day. All of this came as a surprise to you? What is going on?
I don't know what to tell you.
I just started taking ginkgo biloba pills, and maybe I should give you some so you can remember conversations we had yesterday. I actually did start taking ginkgo biloba pills.
Not a bet.
No. It was buy one, get one free of vitamins, and I there was only one thing of the vitamins that I was trying to buy, and I was like, oh, fuck it. It's like, I'll just add this to my repertoire.
There you go.
Anyway, I remember that we talked about Pat Chun yesterday.
Yeah, so. Clearly we did. I guess I didn't. You had done the research. I didn't really know anything.
I didn't do the research. You mentioned his name, and then I went to his Wikipedia. It's not like I didn't fucking put out an APB. Like, done the research.
You didn't hire a private investigator? Chun spent the past 6 years as the AD at Washington State, bringing the Cougars men's and women's basketball teams back to the NCAA tournament under coaches he hired Kyle Smith, who of course left for Stanford on Monday, and Kamie
Is that news
Etheridge.
to you also?
That is not, that was news to you. After extended droughts that stretched back to 2008 for the men, and the women had not made, I had forgotten this as well. The women before Kamie Etheridge was hired had not made the NCAA tournament since 1991. So it'd been a minute. Obviously a red mark on his tenure, the hiring of Nick Rolovich to replace Mike Leach, but rallied nicely, I think, with the promotion and retention thus far of Jake Dickert. Before Washington State, as you mentioned, was the athletic director on Florida at Florida Atlantic from 2012 to 2017, where he hired Lane Kiffin as football coach, most notably. He
Okay.
spent the previous 15 years in the athletic department of his alma mater, Ohio State, which notably recently hired Ross Bjork as their new athletic director. He doesn't even start until July 1st, because he's replacing someone who's retiring rather than leaving. So I can say pretty confidently that Pet Chun will be UW's athletic director longer than Troy Dannon.
Okay. I was gonna say, don't I don't want to put a timeline on this because shit comes at you fast.
Oh,
There
shit
was
does. God, fast.
Look, we don't know. We don't know who's going to be the coach when at any. I would not even venture a guess who will be the coach of any sport, athletic director, anything at the University of Washington. But I know that for right now, this looks like a great hire. I mean, both the hires that Pat Chun made as athletic director at Wazoo, given the confines of an institution like University of Washington, both location and financially, it's just not an easy place to go out and get big name coaches. Kyle Smith
You
being
mean
a huge,
Washington State? You said University of Washington,
or sorry,
didn't
that's Freudian slip.
you?
stepping stone school, for being honest. this most people call it like the Utah State of the big. Anyway, but
Well, Jerry Sprinkle's buyout sure is quite low, isn't it?
is it really?
It is. Well, we can maybe talk about that in a second.
Yeah, don't have the leverage to negotiate high buyouts either. Great school. anyway, still got your athletic director, Wazoo. But given the confines, both location-wise and financially, but then I mean, this wasn't as much of the case, but still the tumult that was happening within conferences for a long time, like the job that Pat Chun did at Wazoo was pretty incredible. And getting to the place he hired. The only coach who's beaten UW at football in a decade, Kyle Smith getting Wazoo back to the NCAA tournament, winning an NCAA tournament game. Obviously, they weren't able to keep him, but I think that has more to do with conference realignment than anything else. but then also financially, it seems like, I mean, Seattle Times highlighted in their story how good Pat Chun has been with donors
It's
and
fundraising.
increasing the fundraising at the school, basically tripling that number. So I kind of there's nothing not to like here so far. And I think the reality is he's somebody who UW could have hired when they hired Troy Dannon, and it
I.
wouldn't have
Oh, you. Okay, let me finish. You. Let me finish.
it wouldn't have been a shock promotion-wise. It's not like the job was too big for him then. I think the timing maybe didn't make as much sense because it was still pretty fresh off conference realignment.
He was busy suing the University of Washington at that point. The lawsuit
It's
that is even funnier in hindsight.
but it's one of those things where like people were like I went to the Wazoo Reddit page. Just I was just curious what people were saying. Not happy, not gonna lie,
Oh,
not
wow.
fans of this move.
Wow.
but they were just like he was so adamant, so angry at UW about conference realignment, and that's what this always comes back to. I just remember the moment in July of 2020, I guess it was 2022. In July of 2022, I was in Hawaii. The moment I woke up and saw the news, because again, 3 hours behind everybody else, news that hit on the East Coast. I wake up, and the news coming down that USC and UCLA were leaving for the Big Ten, and literally the domino from that point all the way to for the University of Washington, Pat Chun being the athletic director. It is kind of an incredible thing how that happened. And for me, you just thought I was crazy for caring so much about this, right? But
To be clear, it wasn't like I thought, oh, UW's going to be in the Pac-12 forever. None of this matters. It was more just like, it doesn't really affect my life whatsoever.
I legitimately stressed about this. And I will tell you, if you are a person who cares about University of Washington athletics, It was the most important move that has happened in the university's history, is that move to the Big Ten. Being in is it. That is it. Being in the Big Ten. That is why Pat Chun is the athletic director.
I'm still going to go with choosing the name Huskies over Sun Dodgers.
Whatever. You could be the Sun Dodgers and win football games. That is the reason that Pat Chun is the athletic director at the University of Washington. And he seems like, for now, I mean, you don't know how these things are going to play out. But again, process-wise, given the situation with Troy Danning coming and leaving so quickly, I think Pat Chun is somebody who's going to bring stability to the University of Washington athletic department. I think he is ultimately going to be here for a significant amount of time. If the Ohio State job opens up again, so be it. If the Michigan job opens up, if the Alabama job opens up, there are jobs that he will leave for.
And but as we've said repeatedly throughout this whole process and these variety of coaching and AD searches, if he does well enough that he's a candidate for those jobs, awesome. Then yeah. UW will be in a better position.
I think the shit is accelerated. Like the movement of coaches, athletic directors, it has become accelerated as these leagues get closer to basically being the NFL or the NBA or whatever, aside from the style of play, of course, in basketball and the on-court product. But
it is a little weird, though. I mean, obviously, as we talked about yesterday, they're not very similar to general managers. They're more similar to presidents. But neither of those positions turns over in pro sports as rapidly as ADs do. I mean, I guess maybe that's because the fundraising element is just so different from anything you would have in pro sports.
Do college presidents turn over that often?
I mean, they probably turn over more rapidly than ownership groups in pro sports. I guess that's probably true.
I think there's also a piece of it as in the NFL, if you have one of those 32 jobs, you're probably good.
Right. And there's not the same degree of tiers within a pro sports league as there are within college sports. Yeah, that's fair.
They're very clear pecking order. It's the same with a head coach. It's like when the Seahawks hire Mike McDonald, he's going to be the coach until he's not. It's not like the Cowboys job is going to open up and Mike McDonald's just going to go coach the Cowboys.
Yeah, I guess it's more like European soccer in that regard, where you could be playing in the APL with someone, but like there are such obvious distinctions between teams within the EPL that you could see a manager go from one to the other as a promotion.
Yes. So I think that's why is basically there's such a clear pecking order in college of these jobs. But if Pat Chun is a candidate for any of those jobs, great. That means that things are going very, very well at the University of Washington. He also is coming in with the work that Jen Cohen, Anna Marie Kausoy, Kalen DeBoer, literally the whole long list now of people who've done all this work beforehand.
Chris Peterson.
And Troy Danning, Chris Peterson. All of those people, all of the work that they've done, have put Pat Chun into a very desirable position at the University of Washington.
Would Bill Sprinkle and presumably Jim Owens, whoever recruited him?
Again, look at that domino. Back to Bill Sprinkle. That's what I'm saying. I remember the moment Bill Sprinkle was recruited. But all of that work that happened through the last however many years at the University of Washington has put Pat Chun in a situation where he's coming in. He's not having to make an immediate hire at football or basketball. They have two of the coaches who are probably the best possible coaches for those jobs. Again, process-wise, neither has played a fucking game yet, but process-wise, looking like they're in a very solid position, he has a very nice runway and an institution that's headed to the Big Ten. They're not going to have the same money as the other Big Ten programs, but the goal is to have them be successful to make up that gap until they are at the same amount of money, and then the growth can really be exponential. I think that's the moment that the University of Washington, they need the success until they get there, and if they have that success, then they can really hit go, and the University of Washington can find itself competing on a level playing field with Penn State, with Michigan, with Ohio State.
I mean, they will, because they will never be on a level playing field with those schools financially, because they are larger and better supported schools. But that's fine.
They could build a pretty significant base. Oregon 20 years ago could have never kept a coach like the coach that they kept. And things change over time. Clemson wasn't the program that it was. Success, especially success over a long period of time, changes how an institution and a football program especially is viewed. And I think the hope is that Danny Sprinkle can also elevate the basketball program so that University of Washington athletics overall, paired with the softball team, paired with the women's basketball team looking pretty solid for the future. Like, all of these things can lead to an overall good athletic department.
Yeah, absolutely. And
so, but I do think the timing of this, I don't want to say we have to thank Troy Dannon for it, because again, job-wise, Pat Chun was fine, ready for this job when Troy Dannon was hired. I don't think he was necessarily interested in the job.
I just don't think it could have happened then. I don't think, for myriad reasons, it could have happened then. It still was awfully soon, but then it was too soon.
Enough time has passed now. There's a little bit more clarity on what things are going to look like for Washington State. You know, the lawsuit with the rest of the Pac-10 settled.
Made a bunch of money off of the Pac-12's unexpectedly good NCAA tournament run, with Arizona still carrying the flag for what was this conference.
Pat Chun kind of did the work where he's not leaving. Wazoo is not in a good position overall, but they just weren't going to be in a good position. There's an unfortunate piece to all of this about Washington State University that, no matter what happened, no matter what Pat Chun did, no matter what anybody else did, anybody involved, they just are in Pullman, Washington. And that's it. That's always going to be the case for Washington State University.
And not that large of an institution. I mean, I think that's the piece that often gets lost in this is, you know, people are treated as strictly a product of market size. And that's a factor, but UW is also just a much bigger university. A much more academically prowess university.
My hope is that Wazoo long-term is able to turn this into like the punchy underdogs or whatever. Like, everybody left us behind. Now we're going to go kick their ass or whatever. Yeah. Like, I've never have I cheered more for Washington State University than I do right now.
It's going to be very amusing for Pat Chun to be leading the conversations about what to do with, you know, the rivalry series and all these sports that aren't football.
I actually think that's a good thing that he has the relationship.
I think it's a great
Wazoo that there isn't, like, he's going to be less likely to be like, fuck them over there. You know what I mean? Like, I think he has that perspective and that background.
They won't be likely to say fuck him over there, but we'll see.
I think that there's still, he presumably has friends in the athletic department. And people that he hired in the athletic department. So, again, it's an unfortunate thing for Wazoo, but the reality is, with conference realignment, like, everybody was going to go. Jake Dickert's still the coach of the football team, right?
Yes.
So it's nice that there is some consistency there. But look, I saw this hire. To me, I was like, he's a person who's ready for this job. He has Big Ten experience, having worked at Ohio State for a number of years. He's been successful with the coaching hires. He's been successful with fundraising. I also like that it's a more diverse athletic director, because, again, the institution become pretty white in management and also coaching. And I think Pat Chun was the first Asian American athletic director at a Power 5 school.
That's correct, yes.
So, I don't know, across the board, this feels like a very, very solid hire, and he seems like somebody who I think will represent the institution well and is coming in a very, very good position.
Is it worth asking the question, do we think if the timing on this had been somewhat different, would it be more likely that Kyle Smith would have followed him from Washington State?
Maybe.
I mean,
I don't know. There's something about...
Oh, and Danny Sprinkle was on KJR on Tuesday, talked about growing up a huge UW fan, how coming with his dad, who is, again, as we've talked about ad nauseum, played football here, was an alum, coming to Seattle with him for one home game a year was like the biggest event of his year. It was his seafare. That was a joke. You could laugh
his
at seafare. That.
Okay. Just remember this interview when he accepts the whatever job, the Florida job or something.
I'm not saying that that's going to prevent it. Okay. Let's be clear. This was Jim Cohen's dream job too, until it wasn't.
Don't get too attached.
Everybody has their stones on which to step.
Look, if we make the NCAA tournament, I don't even care. Do you know how horrible it's been watching Husky basketball and paying attention to Husky basketball? I think you do.
I do, because I was the one who said I would accept a Mike Hopkins Sweet 16 run even if it meant a contract extension for him, because there's no guarantee there's going to be a Sweet 16 run with anyone else.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably the case. And also, Kyle Smith obviously has some say in this. Like, you've wondered about him, why he would want the Stanford job. I had looked this up. I had kind of forgotten. His wife played at St. Mary's. She's actually from here. She's from Chelan, of all places. But his wife played at St. Mary's.
That's you're from here.
Chelan is
I
from
you're thinking in terms of legislative districts.
I'm thinking from the state of
You're
Washington.
thinking from the perspective of the most gerrymandered legislative district, where I am in the same legislative district as Chelan. Is that what you're thinking in?
Look, I'm
Look, in
Feldenkrais
the
gerrymandering
interests of the people of Fairwood, Washington have to be the same as the interests of the people from Chelan, Washington.
It's a lot closer to here than it is to Palo Alto,
I
but
guess so. I think probably the people, I mean, Palo Alto maybe is a little bit different, but there might be people more along the West Coast in California who probably have similar perspectives that people here have than people in Chelan, Washington.
Kyle Smith coached at St. Mary's. That's where he met his wife after she played there and was in athletic administration. He coached for a long period of time at USF. I think getting back to the Bay Area was probably something of a priority for him, that, who knows how the UW job necessarily would have compared, even if that was on the table. Also, like you said, look, taking the athletic director is one thing. If you took the athletic director and the men's basketball coach for the team that you just kicked out of the Pac-12, like, that's a lot
I
to
think
take.
Danny Sprinkle is a more exciting coaching prospect than Kyle Smith is.
I don't have a strong feeling on it either way. I think they're both terrific coaches based on what we know.
If you asked me apples to apples last week, given all this, I still would have said I prefer Danny Sprinkle. He's just a little bit
Yeah, but
fresher.
we
He's
would
a
have had to
little bit
ask you
younger.
before you knew about the Bill Sprinkle thing.
But he's a little bit fresher, a little bit younger. He's made more NCAA tournaments than Kyle Smith has made. And it's not like he's worked at better places. Maybe it's
I
slightly
mean,
easier at Montana State to make an NCAA
I think
tournament.
it is easier, yes, out of the big sky to make it than out
But
of the
also, didn't
Pac-12.
we look at this in Montana State hadn't made an NCAA tournament since like 1970? So,
No, it wasn't that long, but they had only made two ever before he arrived there.
yeah. So, what I don't like. If you're a competent coach or a good coach, it's easier, but you still have to have the first part of being the good coach.
Yes.
So being to three consecutive NCAA tournaments, being a little bit younger, having the connection to the Northwest, I would rather have Danny Sprinkle anyway instead of Kyle Smith. And I do think the Stanford job is a fine job. It's a nice job. And going and being a coach in the ACC is a pretty big deal for basketball. So Kyle Smith is also going into some tumult, though. He's not going into a, he's going from one unstable conference to another unstable conference.
Here's a part of, I guess they had made the NCAA tournament previously in 1951. So maybe my Montana State count was actually off. But a fun fact, since 1951, until this year, before this year, of their four NCAA tournament appearances, Danny Sprinkle was actually a part of three of them because he was a player, a freshman on the
There you go.
1996 team that made
All
it.
Sprinkle does is go to the tournament.
So, yeah, so Montana State maybe still reeling from Danny Sprinkle's departure, even though, again, they did
They
make the
probably
NCAA
should.
tournament this year.
Anyway,
Oh,
I think it's a great
awkward
hire.
pauses are back.
That's it. I'm just kind of I'm excited about it as much as you could be excited about an athletic director. This is like a position that in the 90s would have just been like, who's the athletic director? UW's kind of had some weirdly notable ones
Yeah, I think the
throughout the years.
'90s we definitely knew a lot about Barbara Hedges, but, like, can I remember that much about the Todd Turner era?
Todd Turner is
Not
like
really.
really the questionable one. I mean, Mark Emmert, we or
Was
was he the
not the athletic
he was the
director.
president of the college.
He was. Scott Woodward was the athletic
Yes.
director that Mark Emmert brought with him. Yes.
From LSU.
Yes.
We have again, the Utah State of the Big Ten. We're wearing that with pride now.
Many people have compared Logan and Seattle.
But I'm excited about Pat Chun, and I think he just makes a little bit more sense than Troy Dannon made. There wasn't, outside of Troy Dannon thinking on a national level, there wasn't anything particularly obvious about Troy Dannon as the athletic director at the University of Washington. There weren't really ties to the Northwest. He was kind of just next man up. And that I think that's more when people talk about like they like to have coaches or somebody who has a tie to the institution. I think that's sort of what they're talking about. Is Pat Chun doesn't have any specific ties to Seattle, but he was the athletic director in the state of Washington for a number of years and did a good job.
He understands the reality at UW pretty well, I think, having been on the other side of that rivalry.
Yes.
All right, let's get to an update on our NCAA tournament pools. On the men's side, Shane currently the leader with 90 in the 99.9th percentile nationally. Wow. After getting 15 of the Sweet 16 right.
What?
I'm lurking there in second. And do you know who Shane has winning it all?
Who?
Your favorite team.
Gonzaga?
Gonzaga.
Wow. So things will be decided
will
this
see
weekend.
On the women's side, there's a two-way tie between third Pelton brother Reese and Chicago Pace Race. Randy is also up there in a tie for third. I'm tied for fifth. So going to be very interesting to follow that. It's, I will be seeing these games up close and personal this weekend in
really?
Portland as I cover the NCAA tournament regionals for ESPN.com.
Oh.
Yeah.
And the women's regionals are in Portland.
Yeah.
Who's playing there?
USC is
Ooh.
The Texas are the number one seeds. Stanford is also there. Gonzaga, which reached the Sweet 16 on the women's side as well, is in Portland. Those are, and UConn. I should probably mention them at some point. So it should be some good exciting games.
All right.
Our,
wow, the Lakers came back. They went to two overtimes.
It was wild. Yeah, I didn't watch like from the first 5 minutes until the final minute of regulation. And then I still saw like an hour of the game.
To win that game on the road against the Bucks without LeBron.
Yeah, it was a great win.
That's awesome. Austin Reeves is anointed. Austin Reeves has reached the next level.
All right, congrats to Raul Ruiz Diaz, who scored his 80th goal as a Sounder, passing Freddie Montero, his former teammate, as the leading scorer across all competitions. Did not come in a very exciting game for the Sounders on Saturday night, as we'll talk about in the roundup, but still a toast to Raul Ruiz Diaz. And also a congrats to Kraken defenseman Ryker Evans, who scored his first career goal on Saturday. The Kraken's second ever draft pick after Matty Beniers. Evans had 7 assists in his first 23 games before finding the back of the net. We're skipping the search for Seattle's best cookie this week because Tristan just wasn't competing hard enough to get a cookie.
Where did you go?
I didn't go anywhere because you didn't go anywhere.
Oh.
And we were doing it in person, so I couldn't bring them to you.
Solely blame me. I'm going to New York City tomorrow, by the way. Are you aware of this?
I don't think I was aware of that. I mean, I knew you said you were going somewhere. So are you going to get some cookies in New York City?
I absolutely am. Black and white cookie, maybe. Isn't this invented in New York?
I don't know if that was invented there, but we certainly associate it with New York because of Seinfeld.
I've been promised a very good New York cookie, so.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna come back with tales of New York City cookies.
I had good cookies in New York. Let me look up where they were from now, if you want to fill a little bit. Are you doing any other exciting eating there?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Wow. Great content.
Levain cookies is the place that third Pelton brother Reese told me that I should go to. No, I'm doing fine eating, but it's more like I don't have any like special dinners planned. It's more like nice place that is near where I'm going, if that makes sense.
Gotcha. Chip City is where I went in New York that I thought was pretty good.
Chip City.
Yeah. All right. So that moves us into the return of your favorite segment.
Oh my God, we're here already.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at ya.
Okay, so we're still in spring training mode for now. I didn't write down takes or anything. But I do recall that a year ago, leading into the Mariners season, was when I looked at the roster and I said, 10 out of 10, no notes, perfect roster.
No holes. No
and
holes.
Then opening day... The DH for the Seattle Mariners was somebody named Tommy La Stella. I was a little sideswiped by that one. All of a sudden, I had notes days after that.
You got to the stadium a little late. You got to whatever the number 8 hole was, probably. It was where the DH was hitting. And you were like, Tommy La Stella?
ham swaggerty sandwich.
You're damned right you were. The ham swaggerty sandwich is no more, sadly.
I'm not surprised by that.
No, nor am I.
But I've looked at the roster again this year. I've done a thorough purview. Another 10 out of 10
wow.
for the Seattle Mariners roster. Really top to bottom. I do feel like this offseason, in the end, when you look at it going into opening day, kind of came together pretty perfectly. Third base, maybe the only question mark that I see. But the additions, the Garver addition, Jorge Polanco, Mitch is back in right field. It's impossible
double Mitches. Double Mitches.
Not to be excited about this team and this roster. They still have the young pitching staff. Julio is entering his prime. The Mariners now, I feel like they are poised. And I don't mean to say that this is the year, but this is the year. The Mariners have moved out of this phase of young and punchy. This isn't just Julio Rodriguez is a rookie. Julio Rodriguez is in his second year. You tell me Julio Rodriguez is the timeline. He's now a crafty veteran. George Kirby also is in that phase. They are now a more experienced team, and this is the go time for the Seattle Mariners. They made moves which helped them both short-term and long-term. They didn't commit any large amount of money this offseason to anybody long-term that they couldn't get out of. And the roster, top to bottom, their batting order is better than it was a year ago. When you look at the subtractions that were made, ultimately you look at it and it's like the outfielder who struck out all the time, who never really put it together aside for 1 month of the season, injured himself because he was pissy, always was a bad attitude in the locker room. You could tell the starting pitcher who he didn't like from the moment that they signed him, who blew up in the playoffs. The third baseman who he liked, but also was a permanent ground out, struck out all the time. That's kind of it. The subtractions that were made from the roster as they were being subtracted looked like they were a much greater magnitude now that we're than they now look when we're at the beginning of the season. And you can see that Jorge Polanco is there at second base, a position that the Mariners have never been successful at. So I look at this roster with the young pitching staff. Am I nervous about it? Maybe a little. I think there's still moves to be made, but the Mariners are fourth in Fangraphs playoff odds to start the season after each of the division winners. And they're kind of a little bit under the radar. And I think that's when the Mariners thrive. The Mariners don't do
it. In the AL, to be clear, not in Major League Baseball.
We're only competing in the AL. It doesn't matter what's happening in the NL. You can't make the playoffs in the NL. So,
I'm aware, but fourth overall would be a lot more impressive than fourth in the AL.
Fourth in the league that they're competing to make the playoffs in.
Fourth
but,
in the AL would probably, in all of baseball, would probably mean you were top two or three in the AL. That's my point.
But the Mariners do well as underdogs. The conversation around them isn't like it was last year. It wasn't even like it was 2 years ago. They're lurking a little bit. They're a little bit of a dark horse, and that is when the Mariners excel. This is the season. The AL West is there for the taking. The Rangers have faded. The Astros have faded. The Angels are non-existent. The A's are non-existent. This is the Mariners' chance to win the American League West and go to the World Series. You can feel it in Seattle. The expectations are low, and that's when the Mariners ride high.
I mean, that was basically one of my hot takes last season is the alternating years Mariners theory. And
but there,
that it was a good thing
that
they were
bad.
We're
past the alternating years Mariners theory. They're kind of just look at their record last handful of years.
Yes, I know it's been very consistent to record-wise.
They have three consecutive seasons of pretty solid success. And now they have an in his prime Julio Rodriguez and an in his prime George Kirby and an in his prime Luis Castillo.
I want to note the most important takeaway from the offseason, which is Mariners really lucked out not to sign Shohei Ohtani. A lot of questions there. A lot of questions there.
I guess so. Is that an actual perspective?
I mean, no, but you don't think there's a lot of questions there?
I mean, there's a lot of questions there. For the record, I would still be fine with them signing Shohei Ohtani.
I also would be fine with that.
The only thing that we got news about Brian Wu starting. This is... I'm sure that we're getting to the news portion of this, but yes. And I get with Emerson Hancock, they had a deep rotation. I do think the Mariners just unwillingness to look at starting pitching this offseason, it was not the right way to approach the position, because starting pitching is not the kind of position where you say check done. I think Blake Snell wanted to pitch for the Mariners. I think Blake Snell would have signed with the Mariners for even slightly less than he signed for. Obviously, he was waiting out the deal, but the Mariners were never part of that conversation. And if you drop Blake Snell into this rotation, I get he's not exactly the type of pitcher that the Mariners have been looking for, but if you could all of a sudden have Emerson Hancock not have to start in their rotation, be there available when somebody gets injured, or be there as a trade piece, because ultimately these young pitchers are pieces that they can use mid-season if this team is at a place where they're legitimately competing for a World Series, dropping a Bryce Miller, an Emerson Hancock, a Brian Wu, somebody like that for a bat could be a huge deal. And having a pitcher like Blake Snell in the rotation would change things, or Jordan Montgomery, anybody like that. So I think the Mariners' unwillingness to even consider pitching, especially because it was happening on short-term deals. This wasn't tying up their salary for multiple years. This wasn't a seven-year deal or something like that, because it was happening on short-term deals. I think the Mariners should have looked at that, because it was different than some of the hitting that was out there. I think that we may look back on this and say that the Mariners just ran out of pitching at some point this year.
Well, I think that's going to come back to something we haven't talked about in a long period of time, which is the collapse of Root Sports, which is probably going to become front and center for a lot of people when they fire up their TV on Thursday to see the season opener. Like, wait, I don't get Root Sports anymore?
I've got to pay for it. I literally need to go pay for it like tomorrow. God yeah. damn it.
But like, this, you know, last year you could explain away the lack of spending with it. The market was out of control and you didn't want to affect your long-term flexibility going into Julio Rodriguez's prime. As you laid out, that's not an explanation for not signing Blake Snell to a 2-year contract. And I think that Snell is different from, like, people have lamented in the wake of Brian Wu's injury. So he's going to start the season on the injured list after experiencing inflammation in his throwing elbow. GM Justin Hollander said that an MRI after he experienced tightness during a throwing session on Saturday revealed no structural damage. So that's the good news. But Hollander compared the injury to when Wu went on IL last August and missed 17 days. So you're probably talking about a couple of turns of the rotation at this point as the fifth starter. Like, people have lamented not having Marco Gonzalez because of payroll, you know, cutting. But like, Marco Gonzalez would have to do something when he isn't starting games. And we've, like, the whole Chris Flexen is the bullpen sixth starter guy was a pretty big disaster last year. So I'm not surprised the Mariners didn't want to go through that. But if it's a scenario where you could have had Brian Wu in the minor leagues and managing his service time, something the Mariners love to do, that would have been pretty ideal, certainly from a rotation depth standpoint.
Yeah, man, the Mariners could have drafted Tim Lincecum. They drafted Brandon Morrow instead.
The Mariners ended spring training with a winning record after their 1-9 start, finishing undefeated in their last 9 games.
Well, also a lot of ties in there.
Three ties. It was like a college football record from 1908. 6-0-3. They took both games at San Diego in that series in a major league ballpark ahead of the season. Julio homered. All was well on that front. Sam Haggerty will also begin the season on the IL with what Justin Hollander told reporters was, quote, a personal medical issue that is not baseball related. It was very likely that Haggerty was going to be the odd man out on the final roster anyway, so this kind of delays that decision.
Still a number of Italians on the roster?
Still multiple Italians on the roster, yeah.
There's only one. There's only one that I care about.
Canzone? Or are you saying Haggerty?
Haggerty. I mean, I like Canzone, but...
Oh, you know. Canzone's raking. He even hit third today. I don't know if that's a preview of what we're going to see during the regular
season.
Bring
it on.
That's a thing that happened. You mentioned their final FanGraphs projection, 85-77 projected record, 60% chance of making the playoffs. ESPN has them at 86-76 and a 51% chance of making the playoffs. The difference there, mostly how those two teams view the defending champion Rangers, who are projected sixth best by ESPN, but behind the Mariners in terms of FanGraphs projections. So
the Rangers are obviously due for a massive regression.
I mean, already dealing with injuries to the rotation, so you can see the concern there. But Thursday night, we get this all started.
If the Mariners were able to trade Paul Sewald, was anybody else involved in that deal?
What do you mean? They,
The
did
deal
they
that,
trade anyone else with
yeah.
Paul Sewald? I'd have to go look that up.
Oh, he's still at arbitration. That's kind of wild. Or no. He's definitely not that young to still be at
Oh no.
arbitration.
Yeah, no, he's not a free agent until 2025. Sewald?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter your age, it's years of service.
So what? Baseball is a crazy sport.
Is.
But to have traded a reliever for somebody who's hitting third in their order right now, who's a young power-hitting outfielder, plus another player who is going to be a, utility starter for them. What an incredible trade that they made.
And that everyone hated. I mean, they definitely like they still need more arms in the bullpen, especially with the injuries that they've had there. That's also kind of the easiest thing to find midseason.
I literally,
So,
there are arms in the bullpen everywhere. We'd never heard of any of the players that were arms in the bullpen last year at this time.
we've never heard of some of the players who are the injuries we're concerned about now.
Yeah.
I mean, look, would the Mariners have a better chance of making the playoffs if they spent more money? Yes. Do they still have a good chance of making the playoffs? Also, yes. Well, you know who's not.
That's li literally the only position that I lament is not being aggressive about starting pitching, just letting starting pitching go and punting on that. Yeah, for a 26-year-old like coming into his prime ready. I mean, we'll see with Canzone if he grows into it, but
Encouraging spring training, certainly. I don't want to put too much weight on that. Well, you know who's not making the playoffs? It's the Seattle Kraken. His losing streak reached 8 games before they shut out Anaheim behind Joey Decord on Tuesday for nothing. Now we're looking at how high can the Kraken get in the draft lottery. That win pushed them into a tie for eighth with the Calgary Flames. They're 5 points ahead of Montreal, who's currently seventh, but just 1 point behind Pittsburgh and two behind Buffalo. So there's some pretty crucial games to lose down the stretch with, I believe, 11 games now remaining for the Kraken, maybe 12. So we will continue to monitor that the rest of the way and certainly not monitor, 11 games remaining for the Kraken. Seattle Sounders also not looking particularly likely to make the playoffs at this juncture of the MLS season. A bad loss in a battle of winless teams on Saturday in San Jose. On the plus side, the Sounders scored twice for the first time all year, including Danny Musovski coming off the bench for the team's first non-penalty goal all season and his first as the member of the Sounders. But after that score equalizer in the 81st minute, longtime Sounders nemesis Jeremy Ebobasi netted the winner for San Jose, which matched its previous total of 3 goals in the first 4 games combined in the 3-2 win. Earthquakes did have just 1.6 expected goals to the Sounders 2.1, but at some point the Sounders need to convert that into points, having taken just two now from their first 4 matches. Stephen Fry did return in goal for the Sounders, who gave homegrown product Soto Kitahara his first career start as part of a makeshift midfield that also included UW alum Dylan Tevez in the starting 11, with Josh Atencio suspended following his red card, Leo Chu out due to a knee injury, and Obed Vargas in concussion injury after an injury suffered in training. Chu now expected to miss 3 to 5 weeks due to what Brian Schmetzer described as a tear after experiencing patella tendonitis. Probably talking about a low-grade sprain given that timeline, but still not a position where the Sounders really could afford many more injuries. They will plan to get Albert Rusnak back in the starting 11 for the first time this season on Saturday, so that should help. Also, happy news: MLS referees will be back this week after resolving their lockout. But Sounders badly needing a win. Head to LA to face a Galaxy team that, after missing the playoffs last season, is currently second in the West with 9 points from their first 5 matches. Dejan Jovetic is tied for tops in the MLS with 5 goals, more than the Sounders have scored as a team.
Yikes.
Seattle Reign FC, somewhat similar script, as they suffered their first loss in their road opener Saturday in Chicago. After going down 1-0 just before halftime, the Reign equalized in the 63rd minute on a terrific finish from Jisoo Yoon, who continued her strong start to the season. But the Red Stars got the winner 5 minutes later. Familiar from last season, the Reign took 16 shots but put just two on goal. They'll continue their road stretch Friday night in San Diego against those hated Waves. They were off the season. The Wave were off the season's first weekend and suffered a 2-1 loss at home to the Kansas City Current last week, despite taking a 1-0 lead in that one. A little Seattle Storm news. The Storm signed forward Victoria Vivians, who reached a buyout agreement with the Indiana Fever last week. The number 8 overall pick in 2018 from Mississippi State, where she was the leading scorer on the team that knocked Kelsey Plum's final UW team out of the NCAA tournament in the Elite Eight en route to the championship game. Vivians played 5 seasons for the Fever, was a part-time starter last year, has always been more of a volume scorer than an efficient one, having shot 31% career on threes. Last season's 478 true shooting percentage was her best since her rookie season and still 12% worse than league average. So I got to say, the Storm loves signing these players from the Fever, and it did not work out real well with Candace Dupree. Jantel Lavender was really more of a veteran presence than she was a contributor on the court. We'll see how much playing time Vivian's gets, but not an encouraging track record statistically. UW softball took 2 out of 3 for the third consecutive Pac-12 series, again winning the first two before losing the Sunday game. The
Okay.
bullpen came big on Friday after Ruby Malin was hit for three
Who is
runs in
this
as
against? You
many.
didn't say.
Oh, against UCLA. Yeah.
Okay.
So
Oh,
winning the series is still
okay.
big. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
It's still big. Bullpen came up big on Friday after Ruby Malin was hit for three runs in as many innings in a 6-5 win. Lindsay Lopez then came through with a strong start on Saturday, giving up 1 run in 5 1/3 innings in that win. But the Huskies then had just 2 hits on Sunday, pretty much the same thing that had happened to them the previous weekend. They did move up one spot to number 8 in the rankings, while the Bruins dropped to number 15. Huskies will stay home this weekend with series from Thursday through Saturday against Oregon State. Beavers come in 3-3 in Pac-12 play after sweeping their series at Arizona State last weekend.
The goal here would be for a sweep, obviously, to keep moving up. And I think that should maybe be the expectation as much as it can be in softball.
I think so. I mean, 2 out of 3 wouldn't be terribly surprising, but a sweep would be welcomed and
Are Ruby Malin and Lindsay Lopez kind of the starters?
they have continued to start Sydney Peters a bit as well. I mean, Malin is definitely like the ace of the staff at this point, and Lopez is the number 2, but they're working in a variety of pitchers, and Malin has not been quite as dominant in Pac-12 play as she was in against non-conference competition.
Is Oklahoma a little bit weaker this year? Is it a little bit more wide open of a field?
Well, they lost, so by
Yeah.
definition, yeah,
I mean, that's why I'm
they're
asking, because
weaker.
they lost game.
I haven't been monitoring the record since that one. They're still at 31-1, received all
Okay.
25 first place spots.
Okay. Not more
So,
wide open.
when you say slightly more wide open, it's like, well,
Slightly.
there was the second Durant Warriors team that did go 7 games against the Rockets.
Did I tell you about Luka this last weekend?
His pitching?
He threw ball again.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He came in as closer.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, it was in
Did
day two. He pitched on Saturday and Sunday.
they
And then,
have closer entrance music? I know they have walk-up
oh,
music.
I really wanted to be Enter Sandman. I get that it's cliched or whatever, but whenever I should have told the person who was doing music to do it, just because I think he'd be annoyed about it. But
Just
it's just,
for the record here, this is not tangential. The topic at all is tangential, but to me, Hell's Bells is still the premier
oh,
entrance
it's
music.
Enter Sandman is the number one. Come on. It's
I
like the
mean,
greatest
that's
closer of
just,
all time. That's his music. Also, it's such a badass closer song.
it is a badass closer song,
Hell's Bells is a little slow.
but the I think you need some silence as part of a good closer song.
Put this to the Discord. Best
Okay.
closer music.
The Discord has already been torn asunder. I didn't get the you mentioned the Mitches or the return of Mitch, and I didn't get into the double Mitch Witch. Did you see about this?
I did see the. Wait, can you explain the double Mitchwitch?
So it is a two-sided sandwich that
Okay.
is sold as a single sandwich for $16 at the walk-off market, replacing the ham swaggerty.
Darn.
One half
Ripped to the
is the Michanagar half, which is like grilled chicken breast. I believe there's bacon in there, fried avocado. The
Okay.
other half
Sounds
is
better
just,
than the ham swaggerty, I'm not gonna lie.
I
That's a lot
mean,
of ham.
you don't love ham. The other half is a Cubano sandwich, so there is some ham in that one.
Yeah, but I do like a Cubano. Why is it? Who is that for? Mitch Garver?
Yeah.
Is he Cuban?
No.
Okay, you said yeah, as if you were like, of
Well, there's only
course.
two Mitches on the roster
I'm
by
just
default.
saying, I felt like I was like, that man looks as white as can be to me. Albuquerque, New Mexico.
I mean, I enjoy a Cubano.
I agree,
stupid.
but just I you like questioned. You were like, yeah.
Which other Mitch was it?
Well, I don't know. You were like, of course, the Cubano's from Mitch Garver.
Mitch Morse. I don't know. Money making Mitch. I just don't know. No, what was did the Mariners have a Mitch, an outfielder named Mitch back in the day who like went to Asia? After his MLB career, am I remembering this correctly, or is this wild?
Kevin Mitchell.
Oh, they definitely had Kevin Mitchell. I was there. I saw that one.
I believe the star of Dazed and Confused was named Mitch, and he was a pitcher, not on the Mariners, but there's a pretty famous pitching scene.
That is true. Yeah,
Luca came in and struck. He had to get one out as closer. It was not a save situation because they were up five and there was only a runner on first. Now, if I'm understanding save situations correctly, if there would have been two runners on, that would have been a save situation. Is that right?
I was too busy. It's Mike Morse is who I was thinking of. Not named Mitch, but I was conflating him with the NFL player Mitch Morse.
You can get a save if it's more than three runs if there are two runners on. Is that right?
That is correct. Yes. If the tying runner is on deck.
On deck?
Yes.
So the bases would have had to have been loaded to be up five.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. No, so it wouldn't have been a save. Anyway, he ended up getting two strikeouts in his one out that he recorded because of a dropped third strike.
Well, there you go.
I actually feel like it's more impressive, but we did have to talk to him about ball again. It's like Oklahoma's loss.
That was a circuitous route that we took, but we are back here with UW women's basketball, whose season came to an end with a 64-56 loss in the WBIT last Thursday against Georgetown. Husky shot 37% from the field, 6 of 22 on threes. We're down 15 midway through the third quarter, then rallied to take the lead halfway through the fourth, but we're outscored 14-5 over the final 5 minutes and change of that one. Despite this loss, and their loss in the opening round of the Pac-12 tournament that ruled them out of the NCAAs, still the best simple rating system at sportsreference.com finish for the Huskies since the last Kelsey Plum team. I will say it will probably be a disappointment if they don't return to the NCAA tournament next season, Tina Langley's fourth year at UW, but the arrow is still pointed in the right direction.
Yep.
All right, the Seahawks contract details in for the remaining Seahawks, and the team is just about out of cap room. In fact, overthecap.com now has them with negative effective cap space after accounting for draft picks. Not a lot of realistic candidates for a restructure at this point because so many players are already making the minimum or very close to it. DK Metcalf with a $13 million guaranteed base salary and Draymond Jones at $11 million, the most plausible restructures that we could see to create a little additional cap room.
With trade downs, do you think it's more likely that if it is more picks, but they're less expensive picks?
That is another way to do it, yes.
Yeah.
One of the things John Schneider told reporters is the team still expects to be active at the NFL meetings, the owners' meetings, is that the team still expects to add at the guard position, which is not terribly surprising, where Tremaine Ankrum Jr. is someone who doesn't have starting experience, was their only addition after losing Damian Lewis. They'll probably draft someone there, but as we've talked about before, they love going into the draft with some sort of semi-competent veteran so they don't feel compelled to automatically reach for a player at the position of need.
They're not. This team is not making a pick in the first round.
You're more confident about that than I am. I don't know if they're making the 16th pick.
Seeing Latu fall, I'm just like, just go get him. Come on. I don't know if it's medical stuff or whatever, but like,
you don't know if it's medical stuff with the guy who had to medically retire at UW?
I mean, he's been all year considered kind of like a top 10, top 15 pick. So if he's falling, I get that that could be the case, but it seems like he's been cleared.
Now, that's an interesting situation because I wonder if that's a place where the Seahawks could save some money by waiving someone who we expect currently to make the roster just as like a sheer numbers game at edge if they drafted someone in the first round. Daryl Taylor's contract entirely non-guaranteed for what it's worth.
I would not be shocked if Daryl Taylor's not on this team.
Yeah, so that's a possibility, certainly.
Okay, we got through this podcast pretty fast. So can I ask you some other questions?
Well, hold on. We do need to talk about, as expected, Tyrell Dodson and George Fant canceled out a pair of comp picks, both in the sixth round. That leaves them with one in the fourth, one in the fifth.
Oh, great.
Okay, now you can ask me some questions.
Let's talk about basketball, because I feel like basketball, it was so interesting to me. I think I mentioned this to you offline. I was watching the NCAA tournament all weekend, and really, it is, the ends of games are fun to watch, but it is not a fun watch. Watching college basketball, really, I question why we even watch it.
Oh, wow.
There's the one
check
thing.
Check that, Bingo Square. No, we actually have checked that.
That one thing that NCAA basketball figured out, which is having a tournament is fun. And despite what Greg Sankey, that's his name, right? What Greg Sankey might say, like having all of the smaller teams in that NCAA tournament is what makes it fun. If there was just a Power 5 NCAA tournament, it would not be as fun of a tournament. They managed to figure out a really big tournament is a fun thing to do. And that is it with college basketball. And list with things that are done successfully. So I turned over to the Lakers game after that. They were playing the Pacers. And I saw Austin Reeves hooping. And I was just like, wow. I thought that the sport of basketball might have been bad after watching so much NCAA basketball. And Austin Reeves saved it for me. But
it turns out that Austin Reeves, who was one of the better players in college basketball as a senior at Oklahoma, like he went to the NBA and he continued getting better. And now he's not anywhere near one of the best players in the league, yet is still way better than when he was one of the best players in college basketball. So the level of ability is way higher. And as it turns out, UConn could not make the playoffs.
What?
We did this thing again this week.
I'm so confused about what you just said.
UConn could not make the NBA playoffs.
Oh, yes, yes. The NBA playoffs are really hard to make. That is also my perspective.
The Lakers are busy proving that at the moment.
These are the questions that I have for you.
I just wanted to, real quick though, and I did want to, one more note on that. Jordan Hawkins, like a starter, one of the best players on UConn last year when they won the national championship, doesn't really play at all for the New Orleans Pelicans now. And it's not like the New Orleans Pelicans, they're good, they're very deep. It's not like they're a super team. It just turns out that college basketball players are
who is making
other
this
college
argument
basketball.
That college teams could beat it, especially now. This is in the fucking 90s. Like in the 90s, there were maybe some teams. When you look at the amount of senior players that were on those teams, it's like there probably wasn't that great of a difference between the absolute best college basketball teams in the 90s and the absolute worst NBA teams. But now that margin is way bigger.
Yes.
So I wanted to ask about the Western Conference playoffs.
Okay.
Because it's kind of a wild one at this point, right? How many games are left? Like 11 for most everybody, something in that range.
Yeah. Maybe a little less than that now.
Do you think Lakers specifically, they're on a 4-game win streak, just went into Milwaukee and won. Do you think they have any chance, not with the Kevin Pelton any chance rule, but do you think there's any reasonable chance that they're not in the play-in?
No. There's just too many teams that they would have to climb over.
Who do you think? Because right now, I mean, the idea that Phoenix doesn't make the actual playoffs and that the Lakers don't make the actual playoffs, that both of them are behind Sacramento. If you had to wager on two teams to be in, assuming the top six stay the same, or maybe they don't, on two teams to be in from that kind of group of four that are in the play-in, who do you think they would be right now?
Well, Dallas is in a way more favorable spot after winning in Sacramento tonight. So that they're in good shape to be the sixth seed. I mean, Sacramento, like in a single game, you're not going to pick them as a favorite over Phoenix or the Lakers, maybe even with home court, but they only have to win once. You know, one of those teams, whichever team finishes ninth, would have to win twice to knock them out. So I still think Sacramento is more likely in percentage terms to make the playoffs than Phoenix and LA. The Suns are really sputtering right now. They've been better over the course of the season. They've kind of have a higher, they've shown a pretty high upside. But like when anyone is injured, they are just doomed.
I just knew when they traded for Bradley Beal, like this isn't going to work. It's one of those things when people are just like, whoa, they've got who? Same with Kevin Durant. You're just like, this is
well, they do the graphic of like Beal, Durant, and Booker. And it's like, okay, but they have to have other guys on the roster too, you know?
So, but right now, you would say that the Lakers are more than 50% likely to not make the playoffs.
Probably.
Oh
I'd
my
have to
God.
look at what our
Is this
projections say.
also the best that they've been playing since bubble Lakers?
No,
Because
I
I feel like
wouldn't
the
say
record
that.
is better than it's been in that time period. It's just a much more deep West.
I think the record was, I mean, they were in the play-in the year after, but I thought the record was actually still kind of good that year.
Haven't they been in the play-in every year after?
They were not in the play-in last year. They were the sixth seed.
Were they?
Or no, I guess they were the
They
seventh
were in the
seed. Yeah, they
play-in
beat
last year.
Minnesota. Yeah.
Yeah. But this is a better team than that team
Yeah, they still had a
last year.
better win percentage in 2020-21. They were 583 as opposed to 549 entering tonight.
Okay, so they were a little bit better
Yeah.
by a couple of games. The other question that I have to ask you about, how excited are you about Şengün right now?
Well, right now, not very excited about Şengün because he's basically out for the season.
Is he really?
Yeah, he's not responsible for this Houston winning streak.
Who's responsible for this Houston winning streak?
And Jalen Green has finally figured things out in year three. It's very exciting. And then they're playing Amen Thompson is like basically like Jock Landale is the center defensively. He's replaced Şengün in the lineup and just crushed the Blazers the other night when I was watching that game. But Amen Thompson is sort of playing as the center on offense because he can't shoot at all, but he does everything else amazing. He's like the
As like
best
a
athlete in the league
18 year
and a
old,
great
basically, right?
passer. Well, he's like, I think he's like 20. He's
Okay.
older than you'd think, but Amen Thompson is very exciting and
Or
he's
he's
been a huge
21.
part of this.
He's the same age as Şengün.
Yeah.
So he's like an undersized center defensively.
It's like a little like if Ben Simmons didn't have the ball, when Ben Simmons didn't have the ball in his hands when they tried to play him as a big man offensively.
And Jalen Green is just good now. Is this
So,
Rockets team? Are they like the hipster team?
right now, yes. I think they've probably supplanted the Pacers.
Oh, I loved watching the Pacers too. I gotta say, I was like, this must be the most fun Pacers team since Reggie Miller. You know, even the like
Were
Paul
those
George.
teams fun?
Yeah, I think they were fun. But like the Paul George, Roy Hibbert teams, I never found fun. Even when I was cheering for them because you worked for them, I was like, I don't really like watching this team. But watching the Pacers now when they were playing the Lakers, I was like, damn, this offense is good.
That was the most they've looked like early season Pacers in a long period of time, I would say.
They lead the Eastern Conference in points per game, right?
I'm sure they do. Yeah. I mean, they led the whole NBA in points per game for a long period of time.
Looks like they still do.
Yeah.
Because their offense is just so good right now.
But Tyrese Halliburton wasn't right when he came back from his hamstring injury for a period of time.
But so Houston, do you think that if Houston gets into the play-in over Golden State, is that the end of the Steph Curry era? Like, is obviously he'll keep playing, but is the Warriors dynasty more or less done?
I think when you're fighting to get into the play-in, the concept of it as a dynasty is done. Yes, I would say
It's
that. I
all it's
mean,
already done.
I think like they could be better next season than they are this year. They're a team that looked pretty good. I was watching them in the site. Like they were down against a very shorthanded Miami team in the first half, but then they comfortably pulled away in the second half. And there were some moments where like I forget who it was who outletted to Draymond for it was like Chris Paul outletted to Draymond for a dunk and was like, oh, this is the idea. This is what the hope was. There's still glimpses of it, but Kuminga like is on the upswing, and Pajemski gives and Trayce Jackson-Davis give them a couple of other good young players. So there's reason to believe they could be better next year than they have been this year.
Okay. And then Boston is just far and away the favorite.
I mean, I don't know if they're far and away the favorite. They're far and away the best team in the NBA this season.
What's the difference?
Well, people still are inclined to distrust Boston because of their playoff history, but they are submitting like an all-time regular season.
They are a significantly better team than any of those Boston teams that have the like playoff history.
Oh yeah, of course. I mean, the 2 years ago they did play like this in the second half of the season, but it was after they were 500 team in the first half, so their overall stats were not anywhere in this ballpark. I mean, tonight they tied the most wins that they have had since 2009. Or not tonight, yesterday night, I guess. And then they have 10 games left to add to that. So they're going to win comfortably over 60, the most that they've won since, in all likelihood, the most that they've won since 2008. And they have a better point differential than even that 2008 team had. It's the best in franchise history by a wide margin. And that franchise history is pretty good.
That's all the questions I have about basketball.
I figure.
But I am excited for the playoffs.
We close this week on an emotional note, remembering a couple of members of the Seattle sports scene that I knew personally who have passed away in the past week. First off, we learned on Tuesday that Alan Reed, photojournalist at King 5 for more than 22 years, died Monday at age 62. Sounders coach Brian Schmetzer paid a lovely tribute to Alan Reed at the beginning of his media availability on Tuesday. You know, admittedly, the relationship between print reporters and TV photographers can sometimes be a little contentious in terms of, you know, jockeying for space at press conferences and things like that. But, you know, Alan was someone who I think no one in the Seattle sports media would have an unkind word about. He was someone who brightened every media room or media availability that he walked into, and was a fixture in the sports community for a long period of time, going back to the Sonics days, but certainly overlapped with him a lot covering the Storm, and you know, a tremendous loss for the Seattle sports media. Additionally, we learned late last week that Storm CFO Tricia McClain died at age 61 after experiencing a medical emergency last week. McClain was honored by the Puget Sound Business Journal as CFO of the Year in 2019 after the Storm's third championship, and spent 16 years with the Storm. We actually both worked with her at the Storm. I obviously didn't for a longer period of time and much more closely. And even after my departure from the Storm, you know, I would always see Tricia and her husband Chuck at Storm games, and you know, stop and say hello and catch up a little bit. And it's tremendously sad to think that that's something that we're not going to have the opportunity to do this season, because she's not going to be with us. Tricia, I mean, for anyone who's worked in pro sports, knows that 16 years is an incredible period of time to be with one organization. Trish was the only person left who was with the Storm when they first became independent in 2008. And, you know, it was down to three of us by the time that I left at the end of 2012. So to put in perspective what a long tenure it was, and what, you know, the role that Tricia played in helping the Storm be a success on and off the court. And, you know, as with Schmetzer, it was really emotional to see a number of Storm players and coaches sharing their experiences and how much Tricia had meant to them. You know, even though she's not someone that obviously you were seeing on the court or even on the sidelines, it was a critical role in terms of, you know, making the Storm into the Seattle fixture that they are. So, you know, our thoughts and prayers go out to the families of both of these individuals, and we will certainly keep them in our hearts.